Hello?
Hey!
Hello!
What's up?
Hi, I'm Ian.
Nice to see you. Chris.
Thanks for doing this.
This is KCBX, Public Radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian Dellinger, and I'm playing with food. Knocking on the door to a stranger's house, entering after no answer, walking through the house and out the back door, and then following the sound of ABBA's Dancing Queen through the backyard to the garage is, I would say in hindsight, probably the best way to be introduced to the cottage food industry. These small food producers are definitely in the spirit of this show. They are playing with food in their home kitchens in order to scrape together a living out of a passion and drive to share their craft with the wider world. So for this show, I'm going to let a young man from Lompoc and two young women from Monterey County tell you how they are playing with food in their kitchens and making money doing it.
Chris McIntyre, Three Flies on a Knife, and we run our Nano Bakery.
Hi, I'm Amy Loboda, and I have now Joy Explanation Point Kitchen, and I make preserves, so a Meyer lemon marmalade and two berry jams.
I'm Katie Reniker.
I'm Ben Reniker.
And we have Carmel Berry Company. We make elderflower cordial and elderberry syrup.
Since Chris has already set the music mood, I think we'll stick with ABBA all the way through the show. And we might as well start with what a cottage food operator is.
So basically there was a baker down in LA who was baking bread like we do from his house, selling it at the farmer's market. Health department came down, cracked down on him. So we got together with some buddies and they got this bill passed. It was passed in 2012, went into effect in 2013. Shortly thereafter, I came across it somehow. Yeah, and basically just tried to figure out like what we wanted to make and had a buddy that was doing bread and he showed us the ropes. And so now this is what we do.
A great feel-good story to bring the cottage food industry into being. San Luis Obispo County Environmental Health Services can fill in the details.
Lori Salo, I'm a supervisor for San Luis Obispo County Environmental Health Services, and I supervise the consumer protection section. There was a proposal, it was AB 1616, to allow people to make a little bit of money without having to do a commercial development and do a commercial facility for food preparation and food service, because that becomes pretty expensive. You could do a limited menu from your residential kitchen, but you were limited to shelf-stable foods, things that weren't potentially hazardous, things that don't have to have heat control to keep them safe or refrigeration to keep them safe. There's two types of cottage food operations that they determined. The food list is exactly the same for both categories. There's no difference except how you sell the food. Cottage food A sells directly to their customer. Cottage food B sells indirectly. They can sell to someone else who in turn sells it to somebody else. The cottage food A gets a registration from our office, and we only inspect if we get complaints about the facility. Cottage food B, we inspect annually, just because they have the option to do wholesaling.
Sounds pretty straightforward, but there must be some unique opportunities and challenges of playing with food in your kitchen for a living. Up in Monterey County, the conversation about that started with a cocktail.
I'm making some champagne cocktails with our elderflower cordial. We like to start with a sparkling wine that's more on the drier side, not a sweet one. And then we're going to add a little bit of our elderflower, and that's it. Hey!
Wow.
All right, so we're also making an non-alcoholic. This is just sparkling water with a little bit of Meyer lemon as a garnish, some elderflower cordial in it. That's really all you need. You could garnish it with mint or basil or fresh fruit in it, anything like that. But when you want a little festive drink that is non-alcoholic, this works really well. We don't really measure when we're doing this just because we've been doing it for so long. But on our website, we have lots of recipes with actual exact measurements for the drinks.
These are very dainty glasses.
These are one of our grandmothers and our great grandmothers, and we don't know whose actually. Cheers.
Ben will be the cider if I put enough in.
It's all right.
A little more.
A little more.
It's champagne-y and there's something else. And for me, the something else is because I don't know much about elderberries.
So the elderflower tends to add a
floral tone.
Here you are in your own kitchen, and you have two boys mm-hmm. and a husband, mm-hmm. and you're trying to run a business of making food.
Yeah.
How do you juggle, like, getting the lunches ready for school, fixing dinner, and dealing with 50 pounds of elderberries in your fridge?
Yeah, it is a challenge. There's a lot of late nights. There's a lot of early mornings, and then there's mad rushing while they're actually at school. But my husband is able to fill in the gaps too, so it's really a pretty even playing field of who's figuring out dinner and who's picking up kids. And one of the parts of Cottage Food Operator, you can't be cooking dinner, you can't have the kids in there, you can't have pets in there. You know, it has to be during a designated time. I plan that in. If I can't do it during the school day when the kids are gone, then it happens starting at 9 o'clock at night.
Even though it's bread, not berries, it's not much different in Lompoc.
So when we moved in, it was basically like for auto parts. So we had to do some work and some cleaning. Yeah, basically it's just about time management, realizing that this is kind of what pays the bills, so we have to do it, but there's also other stuff that we have to do, so you just have to be really good with your time, which sometimes can be really hard. But we've been getting better, so that's good.
You have half the table filled with these bright yellow turmeric sourdough loaves, but you've also got another giant stainless steel bowl full of something. But where are you gonna put it? I mean, because right now it's in a bowl, and you have to shape it into loaves.
Yeah. Like I was saying before, there's always something to do. After this, then I go to that, and then after that, we start baking everything.
Amy's description of her process really offers a clear picture of the day in the life of a cottage food operator.
Jam, unlike syrup, takes a lot more on the stove time. I've watched my mother make jam when I was a kid, and it would take up the whole kitchen for a whole weekend.
That sounds about right. Or all day. It's rather crazy. You can't have anything else going on in the house. So the first thing that I need to do is remove all of that extra stuff, completely clean my kitchen, sanitize my kitchen, get my sink set up, and then bring in my product. So I have a freezer in my garage that you open it and all you see are 4-pound bags of strawberries. And I think one loaf of bread. As I said, it takes over the entire kitchen. I don't use pectin, and so my cooking times are a little longer, but also that means that my jam is a little looser than you would find jams that have pectin in them. So I prep the Meyer lemons, meaning that I cut them into the slices I want. You use what's called a pectin bag with marmalade, which means you take the seeds and the centers of the fruit in a bag and let that sit. And I let it sit actually for 2 days. So then I come back to actually cook the marmalade.
Where do you put the stuff when it has to sit for 2 days?
So I have a designated refrigerator freezer in my garage. And so I have the big food grade containers that I have my prepped fruit and water in. There's one sitting there now that needs to be processed tomorrow. It's interesting, what's happened right now is now that the holidays are here, I'm getting calls with requests for jam. And so I'm having to figure out, okay, when can I make jam? When can I have my kitchen, you know, baking cookies or making something for Thanksgiving? I'm realizing that I need to start figuring out some designated time because, you know, the rest of your life gets in the way and you can't have anything else going on.
Amy starts out with cleaning her kitchen. All three of these players with food repeatedly mentioned cleaning. What's the county's take? After all, food with labels stating, made by my own loving hands in my own kitchen, which is the heart of my home, from my heart to yours, is all the rage these days and commands big money.
Which probably for the consumer is probably, for most consumers, is a plus rather than a...
Well, yeah, you know, it's really dependent on what you've observed as residential kitchens, you know. I think it would be based on your impression of what that might mean. You know, I've seen commercial kitchens that residential kitchens that are beautiful and cleaner than some commercial kitchens. And then, you know, I've seen some that, you know, they're just very busy, apparently.
And of course, there is cleaning afterwards.
I think the biggest thing is just there's always dishes, you know, like there's always something that's dirty. I think in the kitchen in general, but you know, in the bakery, you know, between that, baking. We do some other products, like we do handmade hand-rolled puff pastry. We do sourdough pretzels. We're never like off for a full day anymore. It's just like more time that we have to not do anything before we gotta get back into it, so.
When I quip that they are playing with food in their kitchens, they are really in their own home kitchens.
Great. You are standing in the kitchen where the elderflower began.
Is this the kitchen you do it in?
Yeah, this is the kitchen. On top of the fridge, you can see all the big pots. There's two big steamers that I steam the elderberries in. Basically, the heat from the water ruptures the peels, and then all the juice gets collected. I have two of those big things and a big pot. So I do it all right there.
Then we'll take our loaves back in the house. So we come outside, walk down our little makeshift path. We do this about 20 times when we take them out.
Okay.
We do two loaves at a time. And this is our oven. It's nothing special, as at max, we're really only doing like four loaves at a time. 42-ish loaves right now takes us about 6 hours to bake.
I am staring at a 30-inch domestic oven. It's a gas oven. Does it have circulation problems?
We have as of recent. Yeah, we've been getting the code F9 popping up and the oven just turns off. Probably a sensor issue, but we've been using this oven more than probably most people do, like, you know, with the oven's lifetime in their home, so.
Yeah, so you've got this 30-inch domestic oven and you are cooking how many loaves of bread a day in this oven?
So the batch we're at right now is 42. That's how many baskets we have for the sourdough. And then we're doing our focaccia batch is anywhere from 18 to 20. Pretzel will vary on the markets. Yeah, it just depends. And then puff pastry, we're maybe doing a few slabs. We'll get about 24 per.
And you say you run it for 6 hours straight a day. Because it looks like to me to do what the bread that you have in your refrigerator, on the table, and in that bowl in the garage, it looks like to me that this is like a 24/7 process.
Yeah, totally. I mean, this oven's, it's our baby now, you know? Like, if we get another oven, I want to keep this one just because we've spent so much time with it.
Using one's own kitchen is part of the permit.
There are labeling requirements still for a cottage food operation. There are specific font sizes that you have to use. You have to actually say it was made in a kitchen, in a residential kitchen, so the consumer is very clear this was made in somebody's house versus this was made at, you know, a commercial cookie place or something like that. It's required even when they're at temporary food facility events, like the community events, the farmers markets, that they still have to identify their food product as made in a residential kitchen. Some people want to do it in somebody else's kitchen. It's only allowed to be in your own home kitchen. You have to be able to basically sanitize from your household item activities or duties. You do your home stuff, then you clean and sanitize your kitchen, and then you do your cottage food operation separately from your domestic activities at the house. But most of our operators do a really good job of keeping their domestic activities separate from their cottage food operations.
If you change your mind, take a chance on the first in line. Honey, I'm still free. Take a chance on me. If you need me, let me know. Gonna be around. If you got no place to go, when you're feeling down.
As with any small business, the owner is not only the producer of the goods, but the buyer, the stock manager, the marketer, and the list goes on.
Harvest is in August through October, depending on where you are. So it's all in the freezer. I have separate freezers downstairs for the products. And it can stay happily in the freezer until I need to use it, and it comes out and it's perfectly fine. So you don't have to process it immediately after harvest, which is great. This time of year is really busy. It's a little nerve-wracking making sure that you have enough for all your orders and figure out how to get that all done in time.
I'm also in a few local shops, so they're also gearing up for the holidays, and a couple of them have little events where they bring their customers in, so there's always needs to be an uptick in supply for those.
You know, you can call us and place special orders. So yes, we can get a call for somebody wanting to do gift baskets, and we'll do it. I just saw a friend at the farmer's market this morning, and she said, oh good, I need cases today or this weekend for all my Thanksgiving friends that I'm going to go see.
We do an overnight fermentation, which helps develop the crust and the flavor, the acids, which help to preserve the bread. We tuck them in our fridge that we conveniently had that was left for us that we had to also clean out. So we stack them in here. It slows down the yeast activity. So it's a slower fermentation. We take them out in the morning and we'll bake these fresh for tomorrow.
And this fridge is amazing. So there's your pretzels.
Yep.
There's your puff pastry.
Yep.
You've got the butter, which I'm assuming is for your puff pastry.
Totally, yeah.
You're not hand churning the butter, and you're not getting your butter from another cottage industry.
Yeah.
What goes into making these choices for your suppliers? Because you don't have the advantage of true wholesale, do you?
Right, yeah.
You've got, you know, Costco and Smart and Final.
Right. A lot of it's logistics, so like whatever we can get our hands on, and we don't have huge cash flow, so we can't like buy bulk at one time, so we're buying little bits here and little bits there, but Costco has a really good deal on Kerrygold. We love it because it's super flavorful, but it's higher fat content, so it's going to be more flavorful. But it's also easier to work with for the puff pastry.
Add to that list of duties, security locker.
Yes, they love it. That's why all those elderberries up there are completely fenced in, because that's where we grow some of our elderberries, is right up there behind the house. And the deer love it, so we had to fortify.
Chris mentioned cash flow. What's the financing behind all this? Is it paying all the bills?
Yeah, it's always scary. There's a few weeks where it was a little bit scarier. I think the biggest thing is to just keep going. That's sort of the advice that we've been given by some of the people that have helped us get this going and, you know, our mentors. Yeah, it gets hard, but just keep making bread, keep going. We're not too keen on like owing anybody money. So right now, everything that we've put in, like we've put in from what we've made. We don't have a huge cash flow because it's, you know, also going into paying for like equipment and supplies, and it goes fast. We're trying to establish ourselves this first year so that the next year we can make, I guess, like a bigger mark than we have this first year.
For now, we cannot rely on my income on this. The goal is to get there. That is a goal. But starting out, you need a cushion, and it's either you get a small business loan or you have a partner that's able to support you while you get it going.
I couldn't have done this first if I hadn't retired with a pension, or if I didn't have a husband who was helping to pay the bills. I think I'm far below, and I don't think I've made any money at this point.
But you will.
But I will.
Yeah. I think that's another beauty of the cottage food operator, is that it does help level the playing field by lowering overhead costs so that a wider variety of people with a wider variety of incomes for their family can do it.
And indeed, there are financial restrictions.
There was originally a monetary limit set on what you could make. Ultimately, the first year you could make $30,000, the second year you could make $40,000, and then from that point on, they allowed you to max out at $50,000. But we really don't have a mechanism to check what their income is for these things. I think it was just to make sure it's a small operation and not blooming into something that becomes competitive with our commercial operators, because we didn't get a big pushback from our commercial operators at the time, because I don't think they thought it would impact their business that much.
The three cottage food operators represented all aspects of the permit. Chris is Permit A, direct kitchen to consumer. Amy started out in a commercial kitchen but is now Permit B, from her kitchen to someone else's storefront. And Katie is in the middle of transitioning from Permit A to a commercial kitchen. A big question is, where do you want to go?
I have a dream, a song to sing, to help me cope.
You're doing every cottage food operator's dream, and getting out of the kitchen and going industrial.
But yes, I feel like I'm following the path of why the cottage food operator category was created. So I started out in my home kitchen, so all my overhead costs were much lower. I could use, you know, my kitchen, my pots, and be on my own schedule and not have to rent space in a commercial kitchen and get certified pots. I now have reached a point where I
wanted and needed to sell outside of Monterey County. And you can do that once you're in a commercial kitchen, but not as a cottage food operator. So yes, I have graduated out of my home kitchen, and now I'm in a commercial space that is allowing me to begin selling online. So it's still all handmade, but instead of in my small 4-gallon pot, I'm in a 60-gallon pot. In 3 hours, we can make as much as it would take me a month of working every single day.
If this oven breaks down and you keep getting F9, what's that going to do to your business?
Man, I guess get this one fixed and get a new one, which we're looking at doing. I mean, the big goal is to move into a space. That's kind of the focus of the cottage food operation is, you know, develop your business and start set a good market appeal and then find a commercial kitchen to get into that you can actually fit a real like baker's oven in. So yeah, that's one of the next steps we're taking is basically just funding for a big oven. Once we have that piece of equipment, we can up our production and time to sleep more and, you know, drink all the wine that's in the fridge.
And those ambitions are supported by the county.
So we advise them what they need to do to become a commercial operator. A lot of times they'll want to move into a kitchen that already exists and operate during off hours, which is fine. They can do that. It kind of splits the cost with, you know, people. So we would support that if that's what they choose to do, as long as the kitchen can accommodate what they are going to do versus what the owner or the, you know, primary operator in the business might be doing.
Ultimately, for all three, it's about the quality and the love they each put into their product.
It's technically called small batch. So I have 4 pounds of berries gives me maybe 8 half pints of jam. So this isn't a huge process. My process is very different. It's one person in the kitchen with 4 pounds of berries as opposed to hundreds of pounds of berries in a processing plant that can pump out hundreds of jars. I consciously use organic berries. I use organic sugar. My recipes probably have less sugar in them. Again, I don't use commercial pectin for a lot of reasons, but I think it's a fresher taste, and I think it's really the berry jam. You see the strawberries, you see the blueberries.
I'm trying to use as little processing as possible in it. And my home kitchen, I would steam juice it, and that is with heat. And then I would heat it just to bottle it. I wouldn't boil it to concentrate it or anything like that, because I wanted it to retain as much of its freshness as possible. They're so good for us, I don't really want to pack it with a whole bunch of heat. Now that I'm in the commercial space, the juice is actually cold pressed. So the only time it's heated is right before bottling. So the flour is an infusion. So it's a simple syrup infusion. So I make a simple syrup, water, and sugar. And then I put the flours, they're dried, so that they can also keep. It's also not a mad rush right at harvest time. So then I infuse the flours, and I also put Meyer lemons in it. And that's a much more delicate process, but goes a lot faster.
Part of our philosophy is that we want to kind of bypass all the people that can put their hands in and give it right to the people themselves. I don't think there's anything better than the person that makes a product, selling it to someone and having that interaction with them and, you know, being able to have that experience like week after week, like we do at the farmers markets. And it's been cool. We've developed a lot of meaningful relationships. There's people that wouldn't otherwise be able to eat bread if it wasn't for us. We have some customers that have some allergies, and because our bread's made a certain way, they're able to eat it. So they're pretty happy. So we're making people happy. That's what we do. We bake bread for the people.
And of course, there have been disasters along the way. Chris and his girlfriend and baker buddy Jennifer Padilla put fresh local figs into their dough, only to discover that an enzyme in the figs turns the dough into liquid. The heat waves over the summer didn't help either. Just imagine being able to cook only 4 loaves at a time while your other 38 loaves are out back in an uninsulated garage and it's 108 degrees Fahrenheit outside. I'm sure the scene was not dissimilar to the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man lumbering down the streets of Manhattan in the movie Ghostbusters. Katie and Amy have their own challenges as well.
Elderberries are very purple, very purple. The juice is just this gorgeous, vibrant color. I fill everything by hand with a funnel and a measuring cup. It's very tedious and very precise. Before, I learned how to contain all my jars in a bigger pot so that if any tipped over, they wouldn't totally tip over. I created a full domino effect of accidentally tipping one bottle, and it tipped over a whole line many of which were full, not all of them. And so that was just cascading cordial all over the kitchen. It was really sticky. It takes a whole day to make a few cases. Yeah, if a case goes down the side of your cabinet, that's a lot of time and money lost.
Yeah.
But you just have to smile about it and laugh about it, because what can you do?
It's a learning experience, right? I just did an entire batch and none of them sealed. They have to seal. I can't sell unsealed jars.
Do you have to scoop it all out, reheat it up,
no.
And then reach?
You don't do that. You stick it in the refrigerator and give it to your family. Or have lots of ice cream that night. You can't reprocess it.
Ultimately, it is we, the consumer, who benefits from these late nights, early mornings, and storage challenges. We often talk about the superior quality for food that's homemade. This artisan food is homemade. There is no mistaking that. I saw it with my own eyes. It is made in the home. For them, all the challenges bring them great joy.
I can set the time schedule. When I was in the commercial kitchen, there were several other operators that were working, so I had to fit my time into their time. So if I want to spend one entire day making jam, I can, or if I just want to do one batch in the afternoon, get the kitchen ready, do the prep, but I don't have to work around it, somebody else's schedule. I've worked for companies, I've worked for hospitals my entire adult life, and it's very different to be independent. And that has good sides and it has bad sides. It all eventually ends up on you, but it's been fun. I mean, it really has. I had no idea that this is where I was going to end up when I retired and said I was going to cooking school, but it's good.
Yeah, I'd say this same thing. The time factor is amazing because it's all on my schedule. I don't have to fit into when another commercial space would be available for me. A lot of times I'm starting at 9 p.m., you know, and working till midnight, but it means that I can spend as much time with my children as I need to. And I can be available to take them to soccer, or I can take them to school and, you know, be there. And so that quality of life has been really important, that I'm able to control all that. And also the rent is a big issue. Rent in commercial kitchens and finding a commercial kitchen space is a challenge. So doing it this way makes it a lot more feasible starting out.
I hope that all the cottage food operators along the Central Coast find preparing and sharing their craft with others as rewarding as Amy, Katie, and Chris do. And I hope they all find the joy in the challenges and the disasters that Amy, Katie, and Chris illustrated that they're able to find. Like anything that someone is passionate about, that they truly love, Chris has a final reminder for all of us.
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, there's always something to do. And the schedule is tough. It's like we don't have a regular baker's schedule because our markets are at different times and travel, you know, so it's a job like all the time, you know. Like I said, there's always something to do, especially dishes.
And this is one episode where I don't have any dishes to do. You're listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX, public radio for the Central Coast. I'm Father Ian, and I'm playing with food.